Gaza, calling for international investigations. Hamas has said after days of losing contact with the humanitarian team, several bodies of their members were found buried near destroyed vehicles in Rafah, southern Gaza. The movement says this act reflects a blatant disregard for humanitarian treaties and principles of the international law. Hamas also criticized the international community's silence as complicity. The group urged the United Nations and humanitarian organizations, including the International Committee of the Red Cross, to take urgent action to uncover the fate of thousands of missing civilians in Rafah. This came as Israel's military has confirmed firing on ambulances last Sunday in Rafah's Tal as-Sultan neighborhood, labeling them as suspicious vehicles. The detention of a pro-Palestinian Turkish student by the U.S. immigration authorities has sparked outrage and debate across the United States, with her friends describing the situation as horrifying.
That is terrifying. And it's terrifying for not only for me, who knows her very well, but it's probably terrifying for everyone else who would understand the situation here. Some of my friends and my students, actually, who are international and who are on valid visas, just like Rumeysa, they are really scared.
Rumeysa was targeted, you know, right at her home. I believe Mahmoud Khalil was as well. So it's just, yeah, it's very terrifying. But I think, you know, people want to keep resisting and keep organizing and fighting for justice, you know, both in Palestine and here locally.
Rumeysa Öztürk's arrest is the first known detention of a Boston area student involved in pro-Palestinian activism under the Trump administration. Her detention comes a year after she co-authored an opinion piece in the school's student paper criticizing the university's ties to companies linked to Israel and calling for acknowledgement of the genocide of Palestinians by Israel. Critics have dismissed her arrest as an assault on free speech, while the Trump administration defends its actions. Over 30 Democratic lawmakers also condemned the arrest, saying it targets political views rather than public safety. Earlier this month, U.S.'s police arrested Mahmoud Khalil, a Columbia University student, over his participation in a pro-Palestine protest. Political analyst John Bosnich says the detention of the pro-Palestinian student Rumeysa Öztürk is completely against the U.S. Constitution.
The Trump administration is going to learn a lesson very quickly. It's established U.S. law that every person in the United States, regardless of their citizenship, enjoys the right of freedom of speech, so long as the woman in question here has not violated any laws in terms of destroying property or violence. There is no chance that she can be arrested and deported in violation of the U.S. Constitution. What she needs now is a good lawyer, and there are many lawyers who would take this case for free at no charge to her, who would assert the U.S. constitutional guarantee of freedom of speech. Unfortunately, in the United States, many of the universities are private, and these private universities are subject to the wishes of their donors. Now, in the United States, the donors tend to be very rich people, and many of them are connected to the U.S. government, to the U.S. military-industrial complex, and so on. So, if the universities receive pressure from their private funders to not allow freedom of speech on the campus, the universities themselves may use their campus security forces to violate the students' rights.
Tensions continue to escalate in the occupied West Bank as Israeli settlers backed by military forces storm a mosque east of Nablus, attacking Palestinian worshippers there. During the incident on Friday evening, the Israeli forces fired concussion grenades and tear gas and confiscated the worshippers' ID cards. The assault is just the latest in a pattern of settler violence in the West Bank, including arsons, stone throwing and destruction of Palestinian farmland. Meanwhile, Israeli forces have intensified restrictions in the Bethlehem governorate, closing several town entrances with iron gates. The number of military checkpoints and gates installed across the West Bank has now reached 898, with 146 added since October 7, 2023, further tightening Israeli control over Palestinian movement. Israeli forces have intensified their raids on and incursions into the occupied West Bank. We were earlier joined by Naka Hamed, our correspondent in Ramallah, to give us more details on the situation there.
Well, the Israeli restrictions and the Israeli, as it is called, security measures have intensified greatly since yesterday, as the IOF and the Israeli regime was trying to ban Palestinians from going into occupied Al-Quds, trying to keep every Palestinian inside their own city. The Palestinian Red Crescent have informed about two injuries inside Nablus, severely beaten two girls, two Palestinian girls, 18 and 14 years old women, were assaulted and beaten while the IOF raided their home in the hours of the morning in the area of Nablus. While, of course, we are seeing more intensified raids towards Nablus and towards their refugee camps, to be more precise. Al-Ain refugee camp, Asker and Balata refugee camps are being under attack, systematically under attack. And not very far from Nablus, Tamun, also in the province of Tubas, was raided, and many homes were reportedly, according to local resources, many homes where the IOF made incursions to those homes, detained tens of Palestinians to fieldly interrogate them and assaulted them. And then until this moment, the moon remains under siege, almost under siege, after the IOF is still working inside the moon.
The United States presses ahead with its aggression against Yemen, launching new airstrikes on various areas across the Arab country. Yemeni media say U.S. airstrikes hit Saada, killing one person and wounding four others. The U.S. has reportedly carried out 14 strikes on the outskirts of Saada city. The latest attack comes after the U.S. targeted more than 40 locations across Yemen, including in the capital Sana'a, damaging multiple residential buildings and stores. The U.S. and its allies have escalated the aggression against Yemen after the country resumed its anti-Israeli operations over the regime's renewed genocide in Gaza. Washington says it will use overwhelming force until the Ansarullah resistance movement stops its anti-Israeli operations. Let us go to Sana'a, talk to Hussein al-Bukhaiti, activist and political commentator, who is joining us there from there. Very good to have you on the program. I know this is a very hard and difficult situation for you to be in doing this interview, and I'm thankful for that. What are the humanitarian consequences of the latest American airstrikes on Yemen?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. It seems that the United States, they are trying to have pressure now on the Yemeni civilians. We've seen that in their attacks against Yemen since Trump has declared his latest operation in Yemen. They focus at the beginning to target a military base, an old military base. Normally, a Yemeni army has not been using those bases because of the Saudi Arabia aggression against Yemen. And as well, we have seen that now it's focusing on highly populated area, in targeting some site in highly populated area, and as well during the night, during Ramadan, we know that all the streets are busy, which have resulted since those attacks in hundreds of injured, and as well maybe about 90 were killed. The attack yesterday as well around Saada has killed one civilian and injured other three civilians. But on the other hand, we see that Yemeni actually, they still stand fast with the Palestinian people, and they said they will continue their attack despite as well the United States sanction that was brought against Ansarullah the Houthi, which they want actually to stop the flow of food that's going into Yemen. And I believe some of these sanctions will start on the 4th of April, which might result in a ban, in a closure of the Hodeidah port, because the United States will set sanction on any company that's bringing oil and fuel towards Yemen. But of course, if the United States will do this, they should actually learn from the Saudi. The Saudi, for 10 years, with more than about 300,000 airstrikes, they tried to use supplies of food and fuel toward Yemen as a weapon, exactly what the Zionists now is trying to do with the Gaza and blockade and banning food and medicine to get into Gaza. But at this time, United States should learn that Yemeni has got now a long experience they know how to stop all of this attack, and as well all of this if there is a blockade will be formed against Yemen. I believe at that time, if the United States will try to close the Hodeidah port, I believe that Yemenis at that time, they might as well close the entire Red Sea, because the United States will not be allowed to use the Red Sea or to militarize the Red Sea to stop the flow of fuel and food to get into Yemen. And I just want to mention that we have seen in the last 48 hours that Trump's one of his statements, he said that Yemenis or Houthis, as he said, want peace. He just want the international media to think that there are kind of talks or messages from Sana'a toward the United States, and they want peace, and they don't want any more for this long, for this war to last. I say yes, there are messages, direct message to the United States from Yemen, because they want peace. But those messages, actually, they are in a type of weapons, they are in a type of ballistic missile, they are in a type of hypersonic ballistic missiles against the United States battleship, they are in a type of drones, and as well in cruise missiles. If the United States will stop its attack against Yemen, Yemen will stop their attack against United States battleship in the Red Sea. And if the Israeli regime will stop its blockade and war against Yemen, this means that Yemen as well will stop its blockade. This is the only contact that Yemenis have with the Zionists and as well with the United States. It's actually by those missiles and drones.
Once again, I appreciate your brave correspondence and reporting, Hossein al-Bukhaiti, activist and political commentator, joining us from Sana'a. Millions of Iranians have taken to the streets across the country on the International Quds Day to express solidarity with the Palestinians and to condemn Israeli atrocities against them. In the capital Tehran, streets were flooded with demonstrators. Fatah Masumi has got more.
Huge crowds rallying in the streets of Tehran to mark International Quds Day. Streets flooded with demonstrators from all backgrounds, waving the flags of Gaza and the Hezbollah resistance movement, holding placards and chanting slogans to show support for Palestinians and denounce Israeli atrocities. Senior officials were also present.
Today at 4 p.m. Venezuela time, our government and people will rally to mark this occasion, condemning the Israeli regime and supporting Palestine. The atrocities occurring can only be described as genocide. Today, in my opinion, is a significant day. The huge turnout of people demonstrates that our citizens understand the situation very well. Clearly, many political dynamics have changed since last year. This turnout reflects that the Islamic Republic of Iran relies on its people.
Quds Day is commemorated on the last Friday of Ramadan. It is a day of international solidarity with the Palestinian people. Just like previous years, Afghan community in Iran also joined other protesters to express their support for Palestinians in Gaza.
We consider Palestine our heart and soul. It is the heart of the Muslim world. Therefore, we urge all officials to take action.
I am here to condemn the Israeli attacks and the egregious atrocities they have committed in Gaza.
The people who participated in the rallies say their presence is a response to the leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution's call.
I am here in response to our leader's call to come out and send a strong message to the world.
As the son of a martyr, I am here because our leader stated that this year's rallies are even more significant. This huge turnout shows that the resistance is stronger than ever.
As our beloved Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah once said, "We will never abandon Palestine. We are the Shia of Ali ibn Abi Talib, and we will never abandon Palestine, nor the people of Palestine."
The huge turnout in Iran is seen not only as a sign of unity and strength of the Iranian nation, but their steadfast support for the Palestinian resistance.
Iranians have once again resonated voices of solidarity with Palestinians on International Quds Day and strongly condemned their recent renewed Israeli bloodshed, expressing full support for the Palestinian cause. Fatah Masumi, Tehran.
The death toll from the massive earthquakes that hit Myanmar and Thailand has crossed 1,000 as rescuers continue to dig through the rubble to search for survivors. The 7.7 magnitude earthquake struck central Myanmar Friday in the midday, following minutes later by a 6.7 magnitude aftershock. Over 1,000 people were killed and more than 2,300 injured in the second biggest city, Mandalay, which is believed to be the worst affected. The toll is expected to rise significantly. In the Thai capital, 10 people were confirmed killed as a skyscraper under construction collapsed in seconds by the force of the shaking. Scores of workers are still unaccounted for at the building, with rescue operations underway. India, France and the European Union have offered to provide assistance to Myanmar after the ruling military general issued a plea for international assistance. And that's about it for this hour's news bulletin. Thank you so much for staying with us.
Everyone has a beloved, a new dear friend. But I have you, my dear. May God protect you, my dear. May God protect you.
IRIB English Radio, for those who seek the truth.
In the limelight.
The Atlantic journalist Jeffrey Goldberg was added to a Signal group chat with top Trump officials addressing secret war plans. However, Donald Trump's top intelligence officials claim no classified information was shared in the group chat. We take a look at the U.S. media's coverage of this story. National broadcaster NBC News has covered the story and tells us more. President Donald Trump's top intelligence officials claimed on Tuesday, 25th of March, that they did not share any classified materials in a group text about U.S. military plans that inadvertently included a journalist. National Intelligence Director Tulsi Gabbard and CIA Director John Ratcliffe both downplayed the mishap at a contentious Senate Intelligence Committee hearing just a day after The Atlantic's Jeffrey Goldberg reported that he had been added to a text thread about U.S. military plans to strike Houthi targets in Yemen. The incident has raised questions about the Trump administration's handling of classified information, as well as its use of the encrypted messaging application Signal and various other electronic communications. In testimony, CIA Director John Ratcliffe acknowledged he was on the text chain, but said it was lawful. He said the Signal app was loaded on his work computer at the CIA when he started the job and claimed it was permitted as a communication tool for work purposes. He did not address whether it was appropriate to share detailed military plans on the app Signal. Tulsi Gabbard, National Intelligence Director, asked by Democrats whether the timing and location of planned military strikes were shared on the chat, replied, "I can attest to the fact that there were not classified or intelligence equities that were included in that chat group at any time." Jeffrey Goldberg, the editor-in-chief of the magazine, The Atlantic, and a veteran national security journalist, reported that the thread on Signal appeared to include Ratcliffe and Gabbard, as well as Vice President J.D. Vance, Secretary of State Marco Rubio, the U.S. Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth, and National Security Advisor Mike Waltz. In a Fox News interview on Tuesday night, 25th of March, Mike Waltz said he takes full responsibility for organizing the text group and that a staffer was not to blame for Jeffrey Goldberg's inclusion. Mike Waltz, the national security advisor, said, "I take full responsibility. I built the group. My job is to make sure that everything's coordinated." The military plan discussed in the group chat included precise information about weapons packages, targets, and timing, Jeffrey Goldberg wrote in his article in The Atlantic. He said he would refrain from reporting specific information shared in the chat that could damage America's national security. In an exchange with Senator Mark Kelly, Democrat of Arizona, Tulsi Gabbard says she did not remember discussing specific weapons, targets, and timing. The intelligence officials both testified on Tuesday that Pete Hegseth, the defense secretary, was the original classifying authority on the chat. Jeffrey Goldberg, the journalist, reported that one message from a Signal account labeled Pete Hegseth included operational details of forthcoming strikes on Yemen, including information about targets, weapons the U.S. would be deploying, and attack sequencing. CIA Director John Ratcliffe and National Intelligence Director Tulsi Gabbard, responding to a question from Senator Ron Wyden, Democrat of Oregon, said they would cooperate with an audit looking into whether they had used Signal on another messaging platform to discuss classified information. In a statement on Monday, the National Security Council said it was reviewing how an inadvertent number was added to the chain. Tulsi Gabbard would not answer questions about whether she was using her personal phone or her government-issued phone, citing the fact that the signal issue was under review. FBI Director Kash Patel, one of the other witnesses on Tuesday, said he was briefed on the incident on Monday night and did not say whether he planned to open an investigation into the incident. The hearing frequently grew heated. Democrats asked aggressive questions and accused the witnesses of jeopardizing America's national security. Senator Ron Wyden of Oregon said he believes Pete Hegseth and Mike Waltz should resign. Senator Mark Warner, Democrat of Virginia, the ranking Democrat on the Intelligence Committee, said, "It was mind-boggling to me that all these senior folks were on this line and nobody even bothered to check whether a journalist or another unauthorized person was in the chat." Continue with NBC News' coverage of this story. In his opening statement, Senator Mark Warner, Democrat of Virginia, blasted the Trump administration with what he characterized as a cavalier attitude towards classified information, describing it as reckless and sloppy. "The Signal fiasco is not a one-off," Senator Warner said. "It is unfortunately a pattern we're seeing too often repeated." Senator Warner added, "The unwillingness of the individuals on this panel who were on the chat to even apologize for acknowledging what a colossal screw-up this is speaks volumes." Senator Warner cited an earlier incident in January when the CIA, complying with a presidential executive order, sent an unclassified email to the Office of Personnel Management with the first names and initialized last names of recently hired employees at the spy agency. Senator Michael Bennet, Democrat of Colorado, grilled CIA Director John Ratcliffe about whether Donald Trump's special envoy, Steve Witkoff, was in Moscow when the group chat conversation occurred. Senator Michael Bennet said, "This sloppiness, this incompetence, this disrespect for our intelligence agencies and the personnel who work for him is entirely unacceptable. It's an embarrassment. You need to do better. You definitely need to do better." Senator Tom Cotton, Republican of Arkansas, The chairman of the committee did not directly address the signal text chain in his prepared opening remarks. Republican senators largely focused their questions on other issues, including drug cartels and China. Donald Trump, speaking to NBC News by phone on Tuesday, 25th of March, stood by his national security adviser, Mike Waltz. Jeffrey Goldberg reported that he was added to the Signal chat after he received a request from a user identified as Waltz. Michael Waltz has learned a lesson, and he's a good man, Donald Trump emphasized. Speaking from the White House in a lengthy back and forth with reporters on Tuesday, Donald Trump downplayed the events and said, "The chat contained no classified information as I understand it." Trump added, "They were using an app, as I understand it, that a lot of people in government use, a lot of people in the media use." Mike Waltz, who was in the room for a meeting of ambassadors, defended himself amid repeated questions about when Donald Trump learned of the chat and how. Mike Waltz said they planned to look into how journalist Jeffrey Goldberg got added to the chat and whether Signal is secure enough to use for high-level discussions. The Fox News Channel has also covered the same story. President Donald Trump is not planning to fire National Security Advisor Mike Waltz in the wake of The Atlantic's reporting of an apparent national security breach, according to Fox News Channel. Donald Trump told Fox News, "He's not getting fired." The president said the incident was a mistake, though there was nothing important in the signal text thread. The president described Mike Waltz as a good guy and added that the attack was a success, referring to the U.S. operation against the Houthis in Yemen. A source close to the president previously told Fox News Channel that Mike Waltz's job is safe and that he's not on the chopping block. Mike Waltz has no plans to resign and stuck to his schedule on Tuesday. He talked to his Russian counterpart about a Black Sea ceasefire deal and later on Tuesday spoke to President Trump. Mike Waltz is also telling colleagues that he has never met or talked to the editor-in-chief of The Atlantic magazine, Jeffrey Goldberg. Democrats on the House Armed Services Committee are calling for Mike Waltz's ouster over the national security breach. "This is outrageous national security breach and heads should roll. We need a full investigation and hearing into this on the House Armed Services Committee as soon as possible," according to Representative Chris DeLuzio, Democrat of Pennsylvania. And also Representative Sarah Jacobs, Democrat of California, said, "We can't chalk this up to a simple mistake. People should be fired for this."
Sound from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to Spotlight. Millions of people in the West Asia region have taken to the streets
to mark International Quds Day. The last Friday of the Muslim fasting month of Ramadan was designated by the late founder of Iran's Islamic Republic, Imam Khomeini, as a day of global solidarity with the people of Palestine. Over the past decades, people across the world have heeded his call and held rallies demanding an end to Israel's occupation of Palestinian land. But this year's Quds Day comes as Israel has expanded its aggression by targeting other countries in the region and exposed its genocidal intent against Palestinians with onslaughts on Gaza and the occupied West Bank. Stay tuned as we'll discuss the importance of the Quds Day rallies on tonight's edition of Spotlight. Here are our guests for tonight's show. Charlotte Cates from the International Coordinator of Summit and Palestinian Prisoners Solidarity Network joining us from the Lebanese capital, Beirut. And we also have author and commentator Saab Shaath joining us from Belfast. Welcome to our guests. We're going to start off this edition with Mr. Shaath in Belfast. Mr. Shaath, welcome to the program. This year's Quds Day is charged with more energy and more purpose because of what's going on in Gaza. The sheer brutality of the Israeli regime's genocide and ethnic cleansing project, which is funded and backed by the United States, is on full display. How important has this year's Quds Day been from your perspective?
Al-Quds Day has evolved into a global platform to inform people around the world about the oppressed people, and mainly the Palestinian who are facing today genocide. So Al-Quds Day became an international platform to emphasize the solidarity with the Palestinian as a moral and a human humanitarian duty. So actions through the day, from, you can see it, the masses mobilization, even in Belfast here, rallies and demonstration and there are speeches to remind the world that Palestine is the cause, and the Palestinian people living under white colonial settler occupation and are facing right now, while we're speaking, genocide and ethnic cleansing, and demanding the people to help support the Palestinian resisting occupation, colonization, and oppression since they are entitled under all international kind of laws to return home and to fight occupation to liberate their own homeland and to practice their inalienable rights for self-determination in their own free homeland. And this is not a rhetoric, it's the advisory opinion was given last year in June by the International Court of Justice in The Hague to the United Nations. It's about its opinion of the Court of International about the occupation of Palestine, and it's demanded dismantling of the settlements and the cleansing the West Bank from over 750,000 Zionist settlers in there. And this is including the opinion given the West Bank, Jerusalem, and the Gaza Strip. At least on that regard, you can talking about people understanding legally the Palestinians, they have the right to resist, they have the right for their homeland, and even the court emphasized that the occupier forcing the occupation, the occupied people to even reach kind of conclusion or settlements under occupation is illegal, and thus destroyed the Western framework of trying to impose settlements on the Palestinian, like what happened in Oslo in 1993, and we're still living the ramification of that.
Let's cross over to Charlotte Cates in Beirut. International Quds Day provides an opportunity for people around the world to express support for the Palestinian cause. Regarding the message that this day harbors, how important is a day like this in raising awareness about the struggle of Palestinians, especially with the ongoing genocide taking place in Gaza? Have these demonstrations, in your opinion, united the global audience against the crimes of the Zionist regime.
It is critically important to have a day like Al-Quds Day, particularly at this time, because this year Al-Quds Day is coming at a time which is very difficult and challenging because we're facing an absolute Zionist and imperialist genocidal onslaught against the Palestinian people in Gaza and the West Bank throughout occupied Palestine, but also against Lebanon, against Yemen, against the people of Iraq, against the people of Iran, against really the entire region. But at the same time, this is also a moment of incredible, heroic, and legendary resistance of people who are truly confronting, what could not be expressed otherwise as like a great evil that is in the world today, and people who are truly confronting that evil and working to stop it and to bring it to an end. And so on a day like Al-Quds Day, this is a day when masses come out, not only the millions that we've seen in Iran, putting to rest any of these attempts to divide the people of Iran from the people of Palestine and making clear the commitment to resistance and liberation, to the million-person march in Yemen, which is currently confronting these U.S. bombings on a daily basis, to really throughout South and Central Asia, throughout Africa, throughout Europe, throughout North America, in U.S. cities, in the middle of Trump's war threats against Iran, and in the middle of this campaign of terror against organizers speaking out for Palestine, people are taking the streets to say that this is a truly international day and a truly international cause in which the people of the world will not be silenced and will not be terrorized into allowing genocide to continue. When Imam Khomeini announced Al-Quds Day, he said that it's a global occasion that not only belongs to Palestine, but is the day when the oppressed of the world protest against the arrogant. And in no year could that be seen as more visibly true and evident than it is today. And the millions of people taking the streets everywhere really shows the fact that people, no matter how much their governments, whether we're talking about those in the imperial court that are full participants in the genocide, or for that matter, the Arab reactionary regimes that are continuing to cooperate with Zionism and imperialism, the people are with Palestine and the people are with liberation.
Mr. Shath, Iran has reaffirmed its steadfast commitment to the Palestinian cause. Massive naval parades in support of the people of Palestine were conducted along the shores of the Persian Gulf, the Sea of Oman, and the Caspian Sea. That took place yesterday, just ahead of International Quds Day. Tehran's message through these demonstrations and rallies have been loud and clear, and that's to condemn Israel for the occupation of Palestine and hold the regime responsible for its crimes in the occupied territories. Share with us your views on Iran's support.
Iran, since the 1979 Islamic Revolution, it's totally changed the narrative, even in the West Asia. Since the Shah was the tool and the fung and turned Iran into a functioning state at the time in the hands of imperialism, the Islamic Revolution turned that in its head and took Iran back to its own people. And the people supported Palestine, and they expelled the revolutionary, the Zionist entity, embassy mission in there, and they handed it over to the Palestinian Liberation Organization at the time. That was a huge shift in the dynamics in the region. And since then, Iran committed itself to support the oppressed people in Palestine or in the region or internationally, because this was a major principle of the revolutionary people who represented the masses on the street of Tehran and all of the Republic of Iran today. So they see today in human history no entity has murdered innocent children or women like the evil Zionist entity. And they understand this entity, as my colleague alluded to, backed and financed and partnered as well by Western imperialist powers. So Iran finds its own honorable position is to lead the resistant faction against the imperialist powers who enslaved Iran before and enslaving the region now and committing genocide on the on the Palestinian people. The Palestinian people, without the support of the Islamic revolution in Iran, would feel desperate today. But when they see there is brothers in Iran and sisters in Iran standing shoulder to shoulder, and there is in Yemen as well resistance standing shoulder to shoulder, and Lebanon as well, and Iraq, this has given them the hope to continue the struggle to liberate their land and be one day feel sovereign in total with total liberty in Palestine from the river to the sea.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Charlotte Cates, Iranians show up in massive numbers around the country for International Quds Day. What are your thoughts on this unwavering support that the Iranian people show for the Palestinian cause?
Well, it's very clear today, as it has been on every other occasion when the people of Iran have had the opportunity to demonstrate in public their support and commitment to the liberation of Palestine. I mean, we remember, for example, the great funeral of the martyr Ismail Haniyeh and how the people of Iran flooded the streets to participate in this salute to a great leader and martyr of the Palestinian cause. And today, in every city throughout Iran, there have been protests and demonstrations and actions and just mass numbers of people taking to the streets. And this just illustrates the fact that the commitment to Palestine is very deep. It is very unbreakable. It is something that will never be shattered or lessened by any number of threats from whoever is heading the U.S. imperialist entity at any given time. And it is it really exposes, particularly in Western media, which is why it's very difficult to actually get these images except through alternative and independent media, that this kind of concept that the people of Iran don't care about Palestine and, you know, want to overthrow their government for the benefit of imperialism. Quite on the contrary, what is very visible and apparent for everybody to see is that the people of Iran love and cherish Palestine and are dedicated and willing to commit and to sacrifice a great deal in order not to give up their independence, their commitment, and their really leading role in defending not just the sovereignty of Iran, but the sovereignty of everybody in the region against the Zionist regime and the imperialist powers that stand with it and their genocidal assault on the entire people of the region. Today, the people of Iran are making it clear that they will not be cowered into silence by any of the threats of war that the imperialists want to wage against them and are going to continue to stand up for Palestine and chart their independent course into the future.
Sure. Saeb Shaff, major demonstrations took place in cities across the world since the start of this Israeli genocide and this genocidal onslaught on the people of Gaza. What role have these mass protests and demonstrations worldwide played in exposing the Israeli aggression? And in your opinion, is this the most isolated Israel has ever been because of this genocidal war?
It's totally, I agree, this is a great question. The Zionist entity is totally isolated in the Western capitals or Western countries around the world, even in Washington itself. And this is what panics the United States of America and the Western imperialist powers in UK or in France or in Germany, since this entity is their military base in the West Asia, and since they don't want the Zionist or the Jewish population within Europe, they want them to be pushed away from West Europe or East Europe to the region in there, and to be used in securing the interest of the empire or the Western empires. So this function state is today under a threat. People around Western capitals who are participating in the BDS movement in boycott, divestment, and sanctions, and they are. This is happening in the churches, happening on the universities, happening on the streets and businesses and that. So the people asking even their own MPs to tell them, is their tax payment, is it being used to support the Zionist entity? So there is a lot of huge moral pressure happening on these governments as well. The elite try to dodge such calls by trying to sustain the support for the Zionist entity. But the whole system become the Western ruling elite. They feel the ground is shaking beneath them. That's why they turn to tyrannical style of oppression against the students or the demonstrators or the activists. Lot of activists today, they try not to travel even from country to country or even from city to city through airlines or trains, in case they be arrested and harassed by the police for a stand with Palestine. So the Western elites turn to be nasty against their own population. That gives the other side of the equation, which the Palestinian revolution, the Palestinian resistance, the people of Gaza expose these entities and these Western elites and the what values they claim they have and what civilized war they are running. It's all become fake, and anybody has tried even in parts of the United States of America to boycott, to have the right to boycott the Zionist entities, the products, they criminalize them in the United States of America. As we see, students yesterday, a Turkish postgraduate student was kidnapped in front of her house because she wrote a post about supporting Palestine. This is kind of tyrannical style tactics and heavy-handed against the population, because the majority of the people in the West are today, and even in the United States of America, are with Palestine. So these regimes are facing themselves, for even forget about the Zionist entity, is totally exposed. I'll give you another example. 2 days ago, there was an international trade unions congress held in the city of Belfast, and there is one representative or a group from the Histadrut, the Zionist entity trade union council. The activists went in there, disturbed the meeting, and they called and the trade unionists in there to join them in the protest. And two-thirds at least joined them, and the rest walked away from that hall. So you can understand they are exposed and rejected everywhere.
Okay, Charlotte Cates, about this isolation of the Israeli regime that we've been talking about, it has forced Israel's far-right cabinet to increase its 2025 propaganda budget tenfold in an attempt to repair its tarnished global image that's clearly reflecting the damage done to its reputation. How can the momentum of this global awakening be sustained to ensure long-term support for Palestinians? As you mentioned earlier, obviously a day like this, International Woods Day, can play a big part.
Well, it's essential that we keep organizing, that we keep acting. The incident and the action that my colleague just spoke about in Belfast is an excellent example of people acting in their area and, for example, as trade unionists to shut down these Zionist institutions that continue to try to infiltrate international movements. We've seen, for example, in Paris, in the massive International Women's Day march of thousands upon thousands of people, the entire march mobilized to prevent Zionists and fascists from being able to participate in this march, despite the fact that they were given a huge police escort. People everywhere are absolutely rejecting the presence of Zionism, and they're absolutely rejecting this genocidal entity that has been implanted in the region, as well as the imperialist powers that are backing it up. I mean, what we're seeing today is that there actually has been a sustainable movement in support of Palestine that has only been growing and growing consistently. You know, many of the people who are involved today, they got involved in 2021 during the Battle of Saif al-Quds or the Unity Intifada, or they got involved in, you know, 2009 when there was the massive Zionist assault on Gaza, or they got involved during the Second Intifada or earlier than this. But this sustainable movement for Palestine needs organization, it needs continued work, it needs even an escalation in tactics that are actually going to be meaningfully disruptive to imperialism and to its economic machinery that keeps the war machine functioning. This is why we're seeing the kind of terror that's being used by these imperialist powers who, you know, on various occasions will claim to care about human rights and freedom of expression when it comes to attacking independent nations that are pursuing their own path of development and face numerous kind of false accusations and charges. But right now, what we're seeing in the United States, in Germany, in Britain, even in Canada, in countries throughout Europe, these countries that are aligned with the Zionist project and are part and parcel of funding it, arming it, and view it as essential to their imperialist project, are engaging in, you know, really a form of state terror against their residents and citizens. And this is because this is all they have left, because the fact is that the people don't want genocide. People don't want to see children being burned to death in their names. People don't want to see any more bombings of tents and refugee camps. And so we've just got to keep organizing, acting, mobilizing, boycotting, and making a movement strong enough to bring them down.
Saeb Shath, we've talked about support for the Palestinian cause. Then there's the polar opposite to that, and that's the inaction of many Arab governments in the face of this genocidal war on Gaza, which in fact has contributed to the continued massacre of Palestinians. Many officials worldwide have called on these Arab countries to openly express their opposition to Israel and sever ties with the Israeli regime. Do you think that some of these Arab governments have effectively turned their back on the suffering and death of their Arab brethren?
The question here, it's a very sort of sensitive. In a quick answer, the streets in Egypt and Cairo are boiling. The masses, they are at the edge. The Egyptian regime itself, which has received so many threats from the Zionist entity, from Witkoff in his interview with Carlson as well. They feel at edge. Egypt is taking a defiant kind of stance against the Trump designs to evict Gaza or to continue the genocide in Gaza. That's one side. The Jordanian regime is a puppet of the United States of America. You can't, but the people in the street of Jordan they are taking a position in there, and they are demonstrating day in and day out. So there is a lot of Arabic countries' population are involved, but it's not to the limit and to the level we expected. But since the Arabic, what they call it, sting or spring, and the counter-revolutionary attack by the United States of America and its reactionary forces against it, and then imposing some regimes in the on top of the Arabic population, which will serve empire and will bring normalization with the Zionist entity faster. The people became worried from attacks against them when they demonstrate. Even we witnessed witness that sometimes in the streets of Ramallah in the West Bank. Abbas regime in the West Bank tried to oppress the people who supporting Gaza, trying to suppress the resistance in the West Bank from Jenin to Tul Karim and that. So the whole thing is universal, but the streets are, again, I want to emphasize that, the streets are boiling. They are reaching a moment now. I don't think there is anybody can return from that kind of point of at the edge break. So the especially keep an eye on Egypt. Egypt is the I think the most influential country, and the Egyptian populations,
okay,
who is nearly from 1979, the Egyptian regime at the time and the Zionist entity signed the Camp David peace accord, but there is no normalization at the street level. The Egyptian population hate the guts of the Zionist entity, and they never welcome any visitors from there.
Okay, we're going to have to leave it there. Thanks to Charlotte Cates, international coordinator of the Samadun Palestinian Prisoner Solidarity Network, joining us from the Lebanese capital, Beirut. And also thanks to author and commentator Saeb Shath, speaking to us from Belfast. And, of course, thanks to you for staying with us on tonight's edition of Spotlight. It's good night for now, and see you next time.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
لا إله إلا الله لا إله إلا الله.
Answering your doubts and questions, and questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
الله هو ذا الرحمن الله هو ذا المنان. لا إله إلا الله.
Please send us your emails through our email, which is englishradio@irib.ir.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim and Assalamu Alaikum to you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. You're listening to another episode of the program Question and Answer on Islamic Beliefs. I'm Atta, the host of this program. Sheikh Ahmad Danish is over here to answer today's question. Assalamu Alaikum, Sheikh. Welcome to your show.
Assalamu Alaikum. Thank you.
All right, Sheikh Ahmad Danish. Today's question asks about the problem of evil. I mean, it's a philosophical question and also a theological question. I mean, it talks mainly about the reconciliation between the existence of evil. And of course, this evil can be evil and suffering, you know, disasters, catastrophes, natural disasters even in the world. With an omnipotent, all-just, all-knowing God. So how these two are reconciled and come together? This is mainly a major philosophical question under the title of the problem of the evil. So we know that philosophy has its own answers, but what about Islam and Islamic theology? How does Islam answer the problem of evil?
Mm-hmm. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. And so when we see this problem of evil and which is, of course, as you pointed out, has been mentioned in the works of various philosophers, and some of the atheists also quote this problem and say that if Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is all good and all benevolent and everything attributed to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is khair, mm-hmm. how is there so much evil in the world?
Yes.
Right? And so how do we reconcile this evil with God being all good?
Mm-hmm.